Blog Talk Radio.
Hello there, folks. Welcome to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. I'm a little slow getting started, and I'm going to try to turn the background music down. There we go. Our opening music got kind of held up in a little technical detail, trying to get the show going. What a crazy, interesting time we live in. There's so much going on. Not all of it is fantastically good. Some of it is really good. So we're just going to have to do our best to maintain a neutral, positive, equalized perspective on these things. I'm going to talk a little bit about the book, The Might of Thoughts, and some of the things that I've been reading in this. As you probably know from previous shows, the pages 200 to about 230 this time through really had a tremendous impact on me. And I was able to pull out what I consider six principles that I have to inculcate myself with continually. And these six principles are: I am confident, I am optimistic, I am cheerful, I am relaxed, I am enthusiastic, I am thankful. And whenever my thoughts start to turn south, become a little negative, I try to pull one, two, or three, or all six of these things out and remind myself. And I tell myself, this is what I'm thinking now. Even though I felt myself become unconfident, I tell myself I'm confident. When I feel myself become unoptimistic, I tell myself I'm optimistic. If I start to lose my cheerfulness, I tell myself I'm cheerful. And that way I can pull myself back out of the unneutralized, the unneutral positive state that we fall into. And optimism is a quality which fascinates all human beings. And every single human being would certainly like to be optimistic. So that's something we have to shoot for. And also confidence, that you have a hopefulness and a confidence in the successful outcome of something. Some synonyms related to optimism are hopefulness and cheerfulness. But confidence is a very important aspect of these six principles, I think, which help us a great deal in moving forward. As I continue to go through this book again and again, I do get a deeper understanding. One of the things I came across today is the power of words. And this is on page 304 of The Might of Thoughts. Therefore, since time immemorial, it has been said, tend the thought or utter it, and it happens. And just as it is with the thought, the word is a might and command. And a lot of the things that I utter, you know, it says, therefore, since time immemorial, it has said, tend the thought or utter it, and it happens. So if you can say these, if you can say things out loud to yourself, for example, one of the things I always talk about is the love of creation, and that love is the highest principle in all creation. And through it, everything exists in absolute logic. Every tiny plant, every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. And the creation radiates love. And in fact, the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. So if you utter these things if you utter them out loud, then it will change your thinking. And it will, so instead of being gloomy, which means to feel distressed or pessimistic, you can actually turn your thoughts around and put yourself in a cheery mood, in an optimistic mood, in a confident mood, because those thoughts, confidence, optimism, relaxed, cheerful, thankfulness, enthusiasticness, all enthusiasm, all these things work together, and they can bring, they will bring in something we'll talk about a little bit, which is abundance and prosperity. So the most important thing in your life is the creational law of evolution. So we're all these important thoughts bring together and help you with your evolution, because if you slide down the slope of becoming gloomy and pessimistic or feeling distressed, this will slow your evolution down. You make yourself miserable. You'll be less efficient at work. It makes everything harder. So what we want to stop doing is tending these thoughts which are negative. It is urgently important for every human being also to not think in terms of some kind of poorness in relation to yourself. Never think of yourself as being a poor person or not having ability or not having intelligence or not being beautiful. You should never think of yourself in terms of poorness, because that can lead to negative things happening in your life. There's also, believe it or not, and I had to put this in my notes, and it's certainly a subject worthy of a lot of discussion, is the creational law of prosperity. And I didn't even realize that there was such a creational law. And abundance and provision is directed such that every life form, and therefore also every human being, has everything in plentiful abundance in order to live and evolve without having to live in want. Now, this is challenging in some ways, because there are people that starve to death all the time. There are homeless people. There are poor animals which are abandoned. There's a lot of imperfection in creation. So the way I look at this is that this creational law is true, but, for example, let's take, you have to fulfill, like if you don't fulfill the law of striving, then your prosperity and abundance is going to go away. So just a crazy example, if you just refuse to work at your job, eventually you're going to get fired and you're not going to have prosperity and abundance in that way. There's also the law of cause and effect, which comes in here. And for example, if a parent abandons a child, then that child is left in a very difficult situation. Now, there are something called creational impulses that come internally from our spirit form, which is basically a fragment of creation. And these impulses can guide us, can lead us. So if you're in a very, very difficult situation in life created by the laws of cause and effect, then you have to really look inward in order to get your guidance. And there are certain creational natural laws like the law of love, the law of striving, the law of harmony, which is maintaining a neutral positive state. All of these are very, very important things, and they work together with this law of prosperity and abundance. So, you know, creation is not perfect. This is why religion is so bad, because people try to fit the idea of a perfect creator God up there who's taking care of everything in your life, when the truth is the law is self-responsibility. There is a superintelligence which created our universe, But the law of self-responsibility, the law is striving. The law is neutral positive thinking. So all these things have to go together. The human being, for example, one of these important things is enthusiasm. And the more you have enthusiasm, you feel at a higher level of evolution every moment. You feel like you're being raised to heights of higher evolution almost like every moment, which is a very nice feeling to have. Enthusiasm means an intense and an eager enjoyment, an interest and approval. You know, in the Latin, the term for enthusiasm means having a god within. Enthusiasm originated from the Greek meaning to be possessed by God's essence. Again, we're going back to people's earlier points of view. Applied to the Greeks, they thought in terms of divine possession. And enthusiasm is also related to the idea of artistic expression. Inspiration in the Latin, meaning to breathe into, refers to an unconscious burst of creativity in literary world, music, or artistic endeavoring. And it's so nice when that creativity comes, and it really comes about by your thinking. Your thinking is so important. You are in charge of the circumstances of your life. Your thinking leads to feelings. Good feelings lead to good habits, and good habits lead to good circumstances in your life. You are the master of the circumstances in your life. You are the master of your own destiny. And this is where dreaming and visions and fantasies come in. And Billy says on page 188, were there no human beings who occupied themselves with dreaming, visions, and fantasies, then progress would stop, whereby there could also be no learning. On page 190 in the Might of Thoughts, it says, thus it is effectively the dreamers, the visionaries, the fantasizers, as well as those most enthusiastic about evolution, who are the saviors of the world. So humanity should never forget or insult its dreamers and visionaries, those people that are gifted with imagination, because it is actually those people with imagination and vision which bring progress and success for all. I have to just, you know, say that as I go through this book, and I've lost track, I know I'm thinking conservatively, this is my fourth time through, it could be the fifth, which is I'm not blowing my own horn here, folks. It's because, obviously, I must need to work on my thoughts, or I would not be so impulsed to study this. And try to listen and try to understand what your inner impulses are. You know, you have a fake self, an artificial self, which is threatened by evolution, threatened by your evolution. And you have a real self, your innermost creational self. That's what's talked about in the Meyer case, which is impulsing your conscious mind. So we have a conscious mind, a material consciousness, and a spiritual consciousness. And we have to keep that in mind. And your enthusiasm, your optimism, your confidence is so important, because we are entering in a very, very difficult time. Let me play a clip, if I can, here, and we'll talk a little bit more about this potential for a civil war. I'm going out on a limb of optimism, and I'm going out on the limb that we're not going to have this civil war, because I believe in the power of our thoughts. And Well, let me see if I can get our clip going here.
Defense Minister has had a close encounter with a NATO jet while flying over the neutral waters of the Baltic Sea. This video was filmed from Sergei Shoigu's plane by journalists. You can see a NATO F-16 jet flying just meters off the wing, and a Russian Su-27 is squeezed between them to ward off the fighter. Well, let's get a little bit more detail on this now and speak to our correspondent, Medina Koshneva. So, Medina, what exactly happened over the Baltic Sea?
Well, as you can see from the video, a NATO F-16 fighter jet has tried to approach the Russian Defense Ministry's plane flying above the neutral waters of the Baltic Sea. Now, Russian Su-27, which was escorting the minister's aircraft, got in its way and tightened its wings, apparently showing that it is armed. Well, right after that, the F-16 flew away. Now, the minister was en route to the Russian city of Kaliningrad on the Baltic Sea for a scheduled working meeting, and this incident was first reported by the journalists who were on board of the plane. Now, incidents such like have apparently become more frequent lately. Just this Monday, a U.S. spy plane flying toward the Russian border made a provocative turn toward a Baltic fleet Su-27, which had been scrambled for an interception mission. And encounters of such sort also took place right at the beginning of this June.
A recent thing that happened is a NATO plane shot down a Syrian plane. And it hasn't been talked about very much, but I'm very concerned about what Trump is allowing to happen here, and I'm wondering if he may be under the influence and control of either the Saudi Arabian lobby or the lobby of Israel. And these people have very powerful effect on our life. Let me also play a clip that's talking about some of the crazy stuff that's going on in our colleges and Evergreen College, which I believe is maybe on the East Coast, but I'm not sure. There have been some student uprisings, which are just absolutely ridiculous. Let me play this clip, if possible, here.
Hello, freak bitches.
People that don't know what's going on, let's lay out all the events that have transpired. Essentially, you were being asked to step away from your college for a day? Is that what it was? Is it one day?
Well, this goes back farther than
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Let's lay out the whole thing.
Okay. So we couldn't possibly lay out the whole thing.
But let's just, for people that have no idea what's going on.
Right.
They're listening right now, and they're like, who's this Brett Weinstein guy?
So the core of it surrounds a tradition that we have at Evergreen called Day of Absence. And this tradition stretches back long before I was ever at the college. I've been there 15 years. This tradition stretches back into, I think, the early 70s. And it's built around a play written by Douglas Turner Ward, a black playwright. And the play portrays events in a fictional town where the black population decides not to show up one day in order to emphasize their roles in the town that the white population is unaware of. And as you would imagine, all hell breaks loose. So anyway, it's an excellent play. And some early faculty at our college decided that we should have a day that mirrored this event, and that originally black faculty and students, and then later people of color, would leave campus for a day to emphasize the role that they play in our community. And then they would later the tradition was amended and had a day of presence added to it where people would come back to campus. And this has been going on, as I said, since the 70s and the whole time I've been there. And then this year it was announced by the organizing committee that the situation would be reversed. And they asked white student staff and faculty not to come to campus. And that did not at all sit well with me. As I said in my letter to the person who had announced this, Rashida, who I should say is staff, and she has ended up at the center of this controversy, I think, wrongly, just because my letter in response is addressed to her, and then it was made public by our school paper, so her name has been dragged front and center. But in any case, my letter, I said that there was all the difference in the world between a population deciding to absent themselves from a shared space in order to highlight their role and a population deciding to absent another population from a shared space, which I find unacceptable as a person, as somebody devoted to the gains of the civil rights movement. I should also probably say as a Jew, when people start telling me where I can and cannot be, it rings alarm bells. So that's the gist of the story. And the letter caused quite a stir amongst student staff and faculty who responded, many of them quite angrily. Privately, of course, people were much more divided on the matter, and there were plenty of people who agreed with my letter. But publicly speaking, there was condemnation of the letter. But the event itself, day of absence, was mostly uneventful. I did go to campus, as I said I would in my letter, and I actually, it's neither here nor there, it was accidental, but while I was on campus, I ran into a student that I know very well, actually a student that my wife and I were abroad in Ecuador with last year. We were teaching abroad, and we had 30 students with us, and so one of the students who had traveled with us.
Okay, I'm not going to let that play any longer. I think I played it last show, but this man named Brett Weinstein is a professor at this college, Evergreen College, and he, you'll have to listen or watch some of the other clips. Maybe I'll make some more clips, but these students basically shut down this school and were very, very disrespectful in terms of how they treated their professors, and really, they should have been thrown out of school for the way they behaved and the things that they did under the guise of fighting against racism. It's just all a bunch of BS, of course. But in any case, in Contact Report 544, Billy talks about having the great trip in the spacer in 1975, where he was told that the U.S., could come to an end after 2020 if nothing in this country changes for the better by then. And even I listened to one of Billy's casual discussions again where they taped him, and he said that the U.S. would be wrecked. I remember that particular word coming out. And in one of the reasons that this is possible because of enormous contradictions with regard to politics, economy, military machinations, also the decline of our culture. That last link that I was playing, the last clip about these students, and I probably need to make some clips on how obnoxious these students are, is really an indication of the decline of our culture. And we also, at the same time, have climbing religion and sectarianism, as well as, you know, huge corruption in our government, a gigantic mountain of debt. But there are a small number of persons here in the U.S. that are working very hard to try to bring about positive change. And I think the people that are listening to this show are very, very important in trying to bring about the positive change that we want to see here in the United States. Well, I want to say hello to Eve. She's joining me in the chat room. So we're in a very difficult situation here. And I'm hoping, and I really think that we are not going to have a civil war. And I know I'm contradicting Billy, but I want to bring about a positive action here, and I want to bring about a positive set of circumstances. So, and one of the important things is you don't want to allow yourself to drift on the ocean of life. Take the helm in hand and steer the ship of your life to solid ground. And optimism is always the key, one of the key points. Real optimism is very important. And you need to have optimism. And there are six important concepts I want to go over again. And in the Might of Thoughts from page 200 to about page 230. And tell yourself, I am confident. I'm optimistic. I'm cheerful. I am relaxed. I'm enthusiastic. And I'm thankful. And whenever you feel yourself becoming negative in your thinking, always go back to these and try to memorize those. Remember, say to yourself, I am confident, I am optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm enthusiastic, I'm thankful. What does Billy say about this? However, and this is on page 228 of the Mind of Thoughts, however, one must recognize the corresponding factors and develop powers which are then realized by means of the might of your thoughts. So you develop power associated to your thoughts by repetition, just like lifting weights. And if the human being actually trains his consciousness-based mental muscles, then nothing is impossible for him anymore. Listen to what Billy's saying here. Nothing is impossible for you anymore. Let me read a page a little bit farther down. Therefore, perseverance and persistence must be developed and activated in order to then set a life zeal. Remember, zeal is a culmination point, which are pursued and fulfilled with perseverance and persistence with the help of the might of thoughts, which are directed at striving for that zeal. And I want to thank the folks that are listening to these archives. A lot of folks are really listening to these archives, which is really good for me because it's really encouraging to see people turning to the Meyer material in this very difficult set of circumstances that we're in. And one of the things you want to avoid is called something called the senseless rotation of your negative thoughts. And I've talked about this many times before. Let me read what it says to you here, page 230. Rather, solely with a senseless rotation of the thoughts around some sort of nonsensical ideas which are then realized as a result of the endless rotation of the thoughts, because also these develop might. However, they cause harm with it, whereby not just the psyche, rather your whole life can be destroyed by your negative thoughts. Good thoughts lead to good feelings. Remember, the feelings always come out of the thoughts. Good feelings lead to good habits. You'll develop good habits in your life. Habits are very powerful. If you develop a good habit, you'll be amazed at the power that that habit has. And good habits will lead to good circumstances in your life. And you'll be optimistic, and you'll be confident, and you'll be cheerful, and you'll be relaxed, and you'll be enthusiastic, and you'll be very, very thankful. Now, these are all very important things for us to have and in our lives. So I wanted to step back and talk about one of the creational natural laws, and that is the law of reincarnation. And our religions, some religions teach about reincarnation, but the dominant religions now do not. And I think it's very important that we understand that creation, again, which I was talking about earlier, the law of prosperity and abundance, that every life form has everything in abundance. And we have many, many lifetimes to learn these lessons. So you have in the middle of your middle brain something called the spirit form. The spirit form is a fragment of something called the universal consciousness. And Schöpfung is the German word for the universal consciousness or creation. And everything that exists in the whole universe is a manifestation of the might and the infinite true love of the mighty universal consciousness. And Billy said, as a young boy looking up at the skies on a starry night in May, and I believe it was 1941, he saw the light which the stars emitted, but he saw an invisible light, which he called the love of creation. And the love of creation is the most, I would say, the most powerful force in the universe. It's the primary creational natural law. And Billy said, in that amazing time when he was a very young boy, that my life is made out of the love of creation. And there's a beautiful writing, and I really suggest everyone read this. It's called How It All Began. And let me read a little paragraph from it. It says, "Again, I looked up to the stars and recognized that the stars were distant suns in the vast outer space, and that these shone by means of their own power, by themselves, even though they were created from the light of the love of creation, as is everything in the whole universe. And again, words, the origins of which I could not decipher, the sense of which I was, however, able to grasp, as with the first words escaped from my lips. Everything is created out of the light of love." So love, which we're talking about, effective love, love based on respect, is the reason that we have a universe in place, because this superintelligence had enough love that it created this universe. And it's not perfect. The creation is not a almighty, immutable God as our religions have imagined something. It is a superintelligence that built this creation, this universe, in love. And love is the highest principle in the universe. And Billy says here, "I recognize that the true source of life is the light of true creational love, which in its vitality creates all life and contains within itself all laws and recommendation of creational order." So the creation, the universe, is not perfect. And we see the imperfection everywhere. We see it in the prey animals, the animals that are killed for food by the predator. We also see much death today. Many animals are killed on our roads, particularly where I live. I see this all the time. And it is, I think, because of the laws of cause and effect, and because that most of humanity is not operating under the law of love. It's the most primary principle. And every creature understands love, whether it's a kitten, a dog, a bird. They all respond to love. They all have this as a natural part of their instinct. A child whose material consciousness is not evolved still responds to love. It's the primary function in the entire universe. And everything in the universe was created out of the light of love. Every tiny plant, every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. And the reason that our nation is threatened is because of the lack of love. And I'm not talking about romantic love. Romantic love is a false love, which will generally create pain and suffering in your life. It can bring much stimulation, but it will not bring stable happiness. And true love, which is based on reverence and respect and a neutral positive thinking, bring stability into your life. It requires a lot of responsibility on your part to maintain this kind of relationship. And because our society is so, it's on a wrong path. It's on a wrong, the modus operandi of our society is to take your thoughts outside of the realm of understanding this fundamental idea, which is the respect of your fellow man, the respect of nature, the respect of plants and animals. There's a beautiful passage in the Goblet of Truth, which I think teaches us about this respect, and it's entitled What the Truth Knows to Say, and it's a little title that appears there in the Goblet of Truth, and it goes on to say something to the effect that rivers, stones, plants, animals, bushes, trees, everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form with a spirit form. And these spirit forms are on a journey through time, which involve many, many lifetimes. And these creatures are aware of each other, and they're connected by psychic swinging waves. And that death is just the passage into the world of pure spirit. And in the world of pure spirit, there is where we make our preparation for the next physical lifetime. So what this passage is describing is the cycle of nature, and really, which is the cycle of love, despite the fact that death exists, despite the fact that injustice exists, despite the fact that creation is evolving as well as we are. All of this, the primary force which should penetrate deeply into you, is that the true source of life is the light of creational love, which in its vitality it creates all life and contains within itself the laws and recommendations of creational order. And if you understand the primary message of love, then you will sometimes very automatically do all of the other things, whether it's the law of striving and the law of harmony. And because of your love and your sense of prosperity and your sense of understanding, you will bring prosperity and abundance into your own life. And Billy said, I recognize that the light which the stars emitted was a light in the visible spectrum. So you see, there's a light which is invisible, which is creational, and which lasts all time. This is the light of love. This is the greatest power in the universe. It's such an amazing thing to try to put your mind around this, to put your thoughts about this. But if you elevate your thoughts, you see, if you elevate your thoughts, then that brings the evolution, the higher evolution. Now here's Billy. He's 4 years old, and he's 4 years old, and he's having these thoughts. I won't tell you how old I am. I'm a lot older than 4 years old, and I'm just barely starting to get these thoughts that this four-year-old had. Think about that. He says, here's a paragraph. Already at the age of four, this great recognition instantly changed my life, because after I was familiarized with this insight and understanding by means of the impulses from the storage banks. And that's what people need to learn, to look in their innermost self for these impulses. And they're there. If you can learn to follow them these impulses will give you guidance. And this is where you learn who you really are. And you'll learn about your life and your life task if you look inside at those inner impulses. And then this part is something I'm way far away from, but Billy explains this. It's something I strive for. He says, I looked at human beings, animals in nature, as well as all existing things in a completely new way. And I suddenly felt a great astonishment within myself about that, which I now discover. I suddenly saw myself in everything. In every fellow human being, in every flower or plant, in every tree and shrub, in every animal, in snow, in water, in the earth, in the lightning, in the thunder, in the clouds, in the wind, in the sunshine. Because everything was and is connected in true creational love, and it forms a unity which can never be separated. Even life and death are woven into this whole idea. And they're intertwined with each other. So Billy had this very, very profound understanding at a very, very, very young age about love, about the creation, about reincarnation. And if we can hold on to these thoughts of love, and apply the principles in the book of the Might of Thoughts, then we can avoid the civil war, the horrible civil war, which stands right around the corner, you see. If we don't avoid the civil war, then we're going to go into something that we can't even imagine how bad it is. And Billy says the U.S. will be wrecked. So we need to learn about the importance of love, and it's such a primary thing. It's actually very basic, and love is such an important thing for us to think about and be focused on. And there's another big problem that we face here on the earth, and that is the overpopulation problem. And we have to reduce and scale our population to fit the planet. So is population control barbaric is the question. And if you look at the problem logically, you will see that there's a false humanitarianism here that makes the problem worse because sometimes we can be attacked just by offering the truth. And the truth is that we live in a very difficult situation in terms of the overpopulation problem. We're going to have to start acting and thinking in a logical manner. And I'm going to bring out some statistics from Frosty Wooldridge books. His book is called America on the Brink, and that's a very prophetic book. Maybe I better get him back on the show. America on the Brink. Roughly 4 million people are born on the street and die on the street every year in India. 18 million people starve to death every year in a world, in our world, where if we lived by the creational laws, that wouldn't happen. You see, the creational law that we learned about earlier was the law of prosperity and abundance. But you see, you've got to live in line with the other laws for that to work. It doesn't work the way people think. You see, the law of prosperity and abundance says every life form and every human being has everything in plentiful abundance in order to be able to live and evolve without having to live in want. But because we've violated these laws related to overpopulation, 18 million people starve to death every year. There's 9,000 newborns per hour over the number of deaths. For example, Bangladesh has 167 million people in it. That's a country the size of Iowa with 167 million people in it. Can you imagine the devastation? I say the most dangerous thing we have in the world is the bulldozer, not the nuclear bomb. See, the nuclear bomb is the obvious threat. The bulldozer is the real threat. It's the threat that nobody realizes. As we bulldoze our forests and our fields and build more houses for people, this is what's killing us. This is what is destroying our world. Can you imagine a country the size of Iowa with 167 million people in it? There are 13 million people, 13 to 15 million people. I'd have to look it back up, but right around 13 million people in Ohio, in the whole state. Imagine more than 10 times that amount. That's what's coming if we don't straighten ourselves out. I think it's Beijing that has also about 13 million people in it. Beijing with 52 lanes of traffic going in one direction. Can you imagine trying to get off the expressway and you're stuck in the inner lane and you've got 52 lanes to go across? Good luck. 10 million children die every year from starvation and their related diseases. The world population grows by about 77 million. And I'm going to try to play, if I can, some of the... I have a clip about the coming global water crisis. So let's listen to this.
Today, according to UNICEF, at least 2.6 billion people lack adequate sanitation, while 1.1 billion people live without clean drinking water, period. Water is the key component in all of our daily lives, no matter where we live. Not only for human use, but for energy, industry, agriculture, and livestock. Now, if you look at the Earth, you will notice that over 75% of our blue planet is water. The problem is, only 3% of that water is fresh water. Over 260 river basins are shared by two or more countries, and most of these rivers are without defined legal or institutional arrangements. Consider the Aral Sea, for example, located in Central Asia. The name Aral Sea is actually translated into Sea of Islands, referring to over 1,534 islands that once existed. Today, the Aral Sea is down to 10% of its original size. The same thing is happening in other areas that were once flourishing are now turning into desert. A report titled Avoiding Water Wars, Water Scarcity in Central Asia's Growing Importance for Stability in Afghanistan and Pakistan, was...
So as our population grows, not only are the forests being wiped out, and the forests are the moderators of the weather, the shade keeps it cooler in the summertime, keeps the air from getting too hot. In the winter, the trees keep all that light from being reflected by the snow, and that pulls in some heat, so the forests moderate the weather, and they keep these giant storms from forming. But as you bulldoze the forests, you take away what is the greatest moderator of weather on the planet, which is our forests, which are critical for lifetime, for life. And we're like it said on the clip, 3% of our water is fresh, and we have an upcoming water crisis. Let's talk a little bit about the water scarcity again.
You might have heard that we're running out of fresh water. This might sound strange to you because if you live in a place where water flows freely from the tap or shower at any time, it sure doesn't seem like a big deal. It's just there, right? Wrong. The only obvious thing about fresh water is how much we need it. Because it's essential to life, we need to think about it carefully. Right now, at this very moment, some people, women and girls in particular, walk hours and miles per day to get fresh water. And even then, it may not be clean. Every 15 seconds, a child dies due to waterborne diseases. This is tragic. The most compelling reasons to think about fresh water therefore have to do with what we might call the global common good. This is not something we normally think about, but it means recognizing how much fresh water matters for the flourishing of human and non-human life on Earth, now and in the future. How do we think about something as local as our faucets and as global as fresh water? Is there a connection between them? Many people assume that fresh water shortages are due to individual wastefulness, running the water while you brush your teeth, for example, or taking really long showers. Most of us assume, therefore, that water shortages can be fixed by improving our personal habits, taking shorter showers, or turning off the water while we brush our teeth. But global fresh water scarcity neither starts nor ends in your shower. Globally, domestic use of fresh water accounts for only 8% of consumption. 8%! Compare that to the 70% that goes to agriculture and the 22% that goes to...
Yeah, all that water is actually being used by for growing food by agriculture. So that's where the water is being used and to grow food for all of these people. And Bangladesh, I mentioned Bangladesh. Let's have a little clip about Bangladesh's population and the slum dwellers, which also struggle for clean water.
Next, today is World Water Day. Tonight, we look at an innovative approach to getting clean water to slum dwellers in so-called megacities. Our story is another in our occasional reports about population issues around the globe. It's part of a collaboration with National Geographic Magazine and the Pulitzer Center on Crisis Reporting and comes from special correspondent Steve Sapienza in Bangladesh.
Dhaka, the capital of Bangladesh, is one of the world's fastest-growing cities and one of the poorest. As in many other developing countries, people are leaving the countryside in search of work and a better life in the city. Dhaka's population, now estimated at 15 million, is expected to hit 20 million by 2025.
Dhaka is one of the megacities which is growing too fast.
Country director for the charity WaterAid, Dr. Khairul Islam, says the increased population density is severely taxing the city's ability to house and care for its people.
Almost 5,000 slums are in and around Dhaka city, and almost 1/3 of the population are living in either low-income communities and slum areas. Most of them don't have ownership over those pieces of land that they're residing. But the main challenge is provisioning essential services for this huge number of population, mainly water.
So to have prosperity and abundance in the world, you must live according to the other creational natural laws that relate to population, the population of about 529 million on a planet like ourselves. We have to have a planet that lives under the law of love. And the law of striving is probably what I'm going to finish up the show talking about here. And this is the creational natural law that brings you happiness. So focus on the law of striving. It's the fundamental law of all evolution. Without striving, there is no life. And one of the vocabulary words I mentioned probably last week is assiduousness. And it's used a lot in the Might of Thoughts. And it means perseverance and meticulousness, continually working, sticking with things. And another good vocabulary word is delectation, which means satisfaction, happiness. Striving means delectation in a form which is always fulfilling and progressive. So your striving will always be fulfilling and progressive, but it's very important that you do that, maintain your neutral positive attitude. To be without striving means unwillingness and affliction. Affliction is inhibited striving and inhibited life. But inhibited striving and inhibited life bring inhibited evolution and stagnation. And if you cut back on your striving, it will bring hopelessness, grief, confusion, irrationality, joylessness, cognitionlessness, unpeace, disharmony, lovelessness, resentment, lies, self-deceit, and reluctance for life. Therefore, delectation, harmony, and happiness, as well as everything positive, as well as grief, and everything negative, are in the end only a revelation of how pronounced striving is in any life form. Depending on the degree of the strength of the striving of any single vision, it will assert itself in the world and prevail, or it will fail, shatter, waste away, and come to an end and vanish. So striving really is the source of your happiness. I hope you've found value in this show. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics, and I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a great day.